followed by the pound key. You may ask the call up to 15 minutes before its scheduled start time.
Enter your PIN followed by the pound key. If you are not a talker, you are now joining the call. Recorded live. You are unmuted.
Okay, let's see, you know, non-members, you know, you're Douglas Pearson, are you able to hear me?
Yes.
Okay, but you're not able to hear it from the computer, you're only able to hear it through, essentially, through the phone, right?
Yeah, because my audio's still up and I can't hear anything.
Okay, well, I have a problem in that Visser essentially got me IP blocked here. I mean, you have all these critters that are essentially just vicious, you know, just vicious animals. In the case of Mike the Kite Delaney, he's been stealing from this little Jew boy, and he stole this little Jew boy stuff named Zion Crime Factory, and I don't have much use for him, but on the other hand, it goes to show that, you know, Mike the Kite, you know, isn't honest or anything like that here. I pretty well muted a, you know, I'm not unblocking a bunch of the guests because some of these nimtards, they wanted to post dolphin porn or something like that. And pretty well I'd given up on doing that here. From what I gather, Andy Donner and Harold Covington ain't too crazy about welcome you to the Northwest or anything like that. I think you probably do better where you're at right now, you know, pretty well working. And unlike say the United States here, when say Toronto and the big areas like that go, were you raised on a farm or anything like that? Do you know how to live out in the deep woods or something? Because you got a good deal of, you know, I mean, I've driven through at least the Ontario portion of Canada, and you have a number of farms. They're northern farms, of course, because it's at a higher, you know, you have longer days, and you have shorter days in the winter months, but you have longer days during the summer, so you have some sort of growing season for grain, for a number of things. I think Canada is self-sufficient on food. There's a lot of people who worry about what's going on, and I try to tell them is that it's not so much the Jews. About 20 years ago, a Prime Minister of Indonesia, you know, the most populous Muslim country, said, how is it the 16 million Jews are able to rule 1.6 billion Muslims? And the answer is it's because of, you know, well, traitors. You know, traitors both in the Muslim thing and, in my case, I get down on Uyghurs. It's a problem with Uyghurs. Where you live in Canada, wouldn't it, you know, if you had a place where you could, oh, you know, a family or whatever, where you could get out of the, you know, get out of Ontario, couldn't you live fairly well up there?
I could probably do all right. As you're saying, the backwoods would be good. Anywhere outside of Toronto. You could go an hour outside of Toronto and find farmland. Problem is, even areas like Barrie now, people are going to have, I was talking to Karma the other day, he says even Barrie's getting small. And he's not the only one I've heard from. It's,
Barrie, is that the name of a town or something?
Barrie is actually the fastest growing city in Ontario, and it is about an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the traffic, drive north of Toronto.
Okay. But are you a city boy then? I mean, I was raised on a farm, you know, just outside of Granby, which isn't much of a...
Yeah, basically I was, I've been down the city for, at least a couple of years now, and, it's always been, a bit out there, but, not on a farm itself.
Okay, you were raised... You were raised in a small town then, or something like that then?
Basically.
Yeah. You have a number, I've never been to Quebec, but I've seen people from Quebec. You have, used to have a number of trucks even from Quebec, and they were delivering paper. You know what I mean? Northern paper to lithographic places and stuff like that. And you have all across Quebec, Ontario, the Maritime Provinces, you know, they call them the Newfies, you know, Newfoundland and Prince Edward Island and all this here. And then, well, where I was raised around South Dakota, you had what? Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba. I'm not quite sure how they are arranged. I think Manitoba, then Alberta, or Saskatchewan, then Alberta, then British Columbia. Am I right on that, or what?
Well, you've got Manitoba going westward, Manitoba, and you've got Saskatchewan, then you've got Alberta, then you've got British Columbia.
I'm not sure. I probably got somewhat, but in many cases, you have these grain, you have these grain farms in southern Canada. Yeah, these cattle farms and, cattle ranches in southern Canada. In many cases, they have more trees and you have more moisture than you do in, say, South Dakota, in interior. I don't think really Canada has any real desert. Now, they have big old tundra, which is real cold, but I don't think Canada really has a desert, does it?
No real desert, but it's sort of like I guess you could call it rainforest land. Of course, we have tundra way up north in the territories and Yukon, and they created none of it in 99. That was a stupid mistake. They've got pretty much no government up there, and of course, they're pretty much Indians, Eskimos, and they go fuck it up, and I'll be surprised.
Well, I don't know if they fuck it up. I mean, they just live according to... I've been stationed in Germany, and until you're there, you can't really see how intensively farmed a place is. About the closest to, say, Germany that I've ever seen, is probably small towns in, say, Indiana or southern Michigan. You know what I mean? But, here, even in the, here, even in the West here, you have brush here. You don't have brush in any forest in Germany. I mean, it's sort of like a park. They have these, they have essentially a clear under forest here. They're intensively managed. The land is intensively managed in Europe. You understand what I'm saying? And so, that is pretty well, it says you've left the chat here, but I guess you're in it now. In case, pretty well, Canada was built somewhat. You read where Gordon Lightfoot sings about the Transcontinental Canadian Railroad. We are the navvies that work upon the railway, or something like that. And you had, in all these white countries, you had some building going on in the late 1800s. And in many cases, there's a limit to how, productive white people doing. You can't really say is that, the Northwest Territories, which had really nothing but Indians and Eskimos, really has declined any. I mean, from what I gather, the Eskimos and the rest, they probably don't go around in sealskin boats anymore. They probably have power boats with electric motors, and they probably don't harpoon seals or whales. They probably shoot them with the white man's rifles. But, pretty well, Canada, you know, except for places like, this stuff that you're saying about urban, you know, Toronto. I've been to Toronto. I've seen all these turbaned, you know, Indians, you know, I mean, not casino Indians, but dothead Indians and Sikhs and all this other stuff here. And generally, if you are living on a farm or a small town, like, say, Granby or something like that, a lot of this crap doesn't seem to really affect you too much. You understand what I'm saying? It's almost like something going on someplace else here that you won't really give a crap about. You understand what I mean? You know, here in Missouri, most people view the goings on in St. Louis, you know, among the niggers, and in Kansas City, Nigger Town, as essentially, well, what do you expect, niggers in St. Louis and Kansas City? Who gives a crap what goes on in St. Louis and Kansas City? There's far more concern about what the Beaners are doing because they are in all these small towns, which have a Tyson's chicken plant or something like that. And, in many cases, where the worst of this crap occurs is when the Uyghurs are essentially, doing stupid crap. But hey, I don't see anybody actually starving. I don't see things going on too bad here. Wouldn't the same thing hold true for you in Canada? I.e., get out of Toronto. You said Bury. Is it spelled B-U-R-Y or, how's this spelled?
Barrie, Ontario. B-A-R-R-I-E.
Okay, Barrie, Ontario. And it's a mile north of, Toronto?
Probably about 100 or so kilometers north of Toronto.
Okay, that's sort of like 63 miles north, something like that. And what do they do in Barrie, Canada?
It's just a regular city like anywhere else, but it's just the fastest growing city. I don't know what their population is now. I could always look it up.
What is the purpose for it? Why have any city? I mean, why Barrie as opposed to, say, Mississauga? I've been to Mississauga. That was where they, manufactured some stuff. I think I picked up some foam which was used in Canada or something like that one time. I forget what all I picked up in, I've been to Mississauga a couple times. Why have any new city as opposed to, say, Mississauga or Toronto?
Well, Mississauga's a bit different because Mississauga's just to the west of Toronto. Barrie's kind of up, not in the middle of nowhere, but it's a lot more desolate out there. The closest major town to Barrie would be approximately halfway in between Toronto and Barrie, which would be Newmarket.
Okay.
It's a town of almost 100,000 now, and they've got a hospital, couple things up there. Used to be nice, now they've got, now they're getting niggers, of course. You figure Barrie's getting niggers, Newmarket isn't, sure enough.
Well, wherever you have niggers, things turn to shit. Here in the United States, they're talking about the Department of Housing and Urban Development essentially, trying to find a way to bring Section 8 housing to small towns and small cities of much less than 100,000. More like, small towns and cities of, say, 25,000 or less. You know what I mean? Talking about, bringing niggers to county seats, across the United States. Now, I don't think that's going to do much good of anything, but, why would you be able to leave the country? From my gear, I heard you've had problems.
Yeah, a little bit.
would you be able to leave or migrate to the United States or what?
What I'd have to do is, I would have to, basically get essentially what our, they say it's not a right, it's a privilege to enter the United States. Right now I wouldn't consider it so much a privilege, considering all the crap you gotta deal with down there.
Mm-hmm.
But, sure, it can be done. I need my FOIA request, working with someone right now a lot of the guys on the program know, has helped me get my rights back to the U.S. And I've got the papers. I just have to go through them and write to DHS and whatnot. In fact, when I called you, DHS, they hadn't even heard of the reason I was given, which was that basically I was undesirable and I was applying with a visa, which I wasn't, and they said I wasn't, but yet I was getting no paperwork. I've also talked to Paul about this, and he said that's happened a couple times, and he said it would probably go away after a bit. But whatever it is, I can probably get, if I get the paperwork filled out, they've got to respond within so many days, and I can get back, but I'll have to.
Why would you want to? I mean, why would you want, let's say you lived in, say, Canada here. It would seem to me that if you wanted to have a job, you would go to, say, you know, from what I gather, the biggest importer, you know, exporter of oil in the world is Canada to the United States. If you wanted to get a job here doing something like that, instead of going to, say, North Dakota, why not go to, say, what, Edmondson or, you know, Edmonton or whatever, around where you have these, you know, where you have businesses like that here, where you have a good deal of economic growth. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a good idea for me. It's what Brad Love suggests, and all the jobs up there. Long hours, but it can be done on the in the oil fields. And Edmonton's pretty far up there, though. They say if you're gonna run anything to and from the United States, the guys that would be doing that would be out of Calgary, which is approximately. I'm not sure which cost exactly, but it would probably be somewhere around Minnesota.
Okay, well, the thing is that it's like anything else. If you want to work real hard, though, you can do so. What I see here in the United States, you know, someone who doesn't have to work, you know, work hard for a living because, well, essentially I get, what, $10,000 a year, easy, and so does Roxy on her widow's pension, and essentially we're able to just live cheap here in Southwest Missouri. We probably only eat about $2 or $3, you know, $2 or $3 a day worth here. We go ahead and buy food when it's cheap, and we have refrigeration or something. So what I see all across, well, the United States is, you know, young people get, you know, going ahead and getting a degree in stupid shit, you know, that doesn't amount to anything. Oop. Okay. Hold on.
You are now joining the call.
Recorded live.
You are unmuted.
Okay, I don't know if y'all can hear me. I was talking to non-member. Non-member, can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can now. The line cut out for a bit, but guess we're back.
Okay, generally, you know, you're in your, what, late 20s, early 30s, something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have a degree in something or another?
Working towards a couple things. I wish I could pick up a trade, but it seems now that even those you have to pay to get certified and learn the trade and all that. And it's just right now, it's just money I don't have.
So, well, that's So, what do you do for a living? You just sort of work as a temp or something, or what?
Well, right now I . And try to work where I can. Working with, pretty good, working with kids with disabilities, that's not only the good money, it's great.
Alright.
As long as your wife can help them out, that's very good, and you can get in. You don't necessarily need a degree to do it. It's very good, and I also work in hockey, which is pretty good money. Unfortunately, last year, the league let me go because I talked to some people I know and they decided to go to a league. And there you have it. And then they, of course, turned around when they said I could be with the hockey tournaments. They turned around and said no. So I had to find other work in hockey, which I was able to. It's a lot easier making that. I was working 4 or 5 nights a week. I was pretty comfortable. And unfortunately, the policy was something about discrimination that's got nothing to do with hockey. They never let me know why they, they called it, releasing from my duties, this and that. They waited a whole long time after the season to do it, put me in a bad spot, and now they want me back, of course, because they've had to turn around and use people from other positions, like their senior, to be my job.
Okay. Am I costing you very much money right now?
Not at all. Don't worry about me. I'm on a calling card.
So how much does it cost a minute for you? I mean, I could, if you could give me your phone number, I could call you directly. You know what I mean?
Oh, I appreciate it. But no worries. I got hours and hours on this thing still.
Okay. Well, I don't want to run through your hours. What I'm trying to figure out is, I mean, you didn't listen to what I advised you to do last year, and I was a little bit annoyed about that. But on the other hand, I wasn't too mad about it. You seem to be an honest activist here. I am not crazy about Paul Fromm. I really despise Paul Fromm. Because I consider him a liar and a hypocrite, who's essentially playing the great white activist with David Duke and the rest, who I consider to be criminals and frauds themselves here. Generally, what my show's been about here is urging activists to stop seeking someone to follow and learn to, essentially follow themselves here, to essentially be, to be good or great men themselves, and to pretty well work with the people of their own community with what they do here. there's no need to scream about niggers and Jews. As I look at it, the biggest problem we have is not niggers or Jews. It's treasonous Whiggers who are out to essentially, you know, out of their own viciousness, are out to go ahead and destroy our entire way of life here, because essentially there's something wrong with them. And, you know, pretty well, there's something wrong with all society. It is determined to destroy itself. So what I've talked about is the, quote, 10,000 Warlords Project, where essentially you hate globally, but, you know, but you kill locally when things fall apart, and things are falling apart all over. But I urge people who, you know, who live in, say, small towns, small towns or even mid-sized cities, to essentially get away from problem people. Get away from niggers, get away from the stupid wiggers, get away from these big-time taxing authorities, to essentially, you know, get a job which doesn't require a lot of training, like, say, truck driving. Requires patience, it requires some attention to detail, it requires a little bit of thinking. But essentially, if you want to work hard, usually you can find someone, because most people do not want to work hard, okay? Alright? So what I'm saying is that if you have problems, usually a lot of the stuff, I don't know, do you have a lot of niggers and gooks and mamsers and all that in these small cities in Ontario or, you know, Quebec or wherever? Do you really have a lot of the stuff that you have in, say, Toronto going on, say, an hour, you know, say 60, you know, 100 kilometers outside of, say, Toronto? You know what I mean? I did see a bunch of small little cities of several thousand here, essentially signs, you know, to these places. I've seen farms up against your, what, Queensway, they called it, you know what I mean, which is essentially equivalent to your interstate highway in, you know, in the United States. I mean, you had a bunch of prosperous looking farms, you had a bunch of prosperous looking towns. I mean, do you have those problems that you have in, say, Toronto and these small towns? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, not quite as bad.
Not quite, but you're beginning to have some of them then, in other words, right?
Sean, not too many.
Not too many. Okay, do you have a lot of dot heads or Sikhs or whatever in these small towns? Still there?
In the small towns, not so much as far as I hear, although I hear good work in Germany with that. But, yeah, I mean, the refugee problem is a thing. And, yes, it does spread out, but let's see here. In towns like Oakville, which isn't too bad, that's nice, and so is Burlington, but as soon as you go out, let's say, north of Hamilton, it's not too bad. There's Indian reservations, of course, but Hamilton worse, but let's say, you know, east of that is Burlington. And it's way west of Toronto, but Burlington is 90% white in the city. But apparently that's getting worse. But let's say you go up north, it's okay. But it's going to get worse like everywhere else. But in general, right now, up north in the smaller cities and towns, it's not too bad. But then again, you know, if you go to London, which is a pretty medium-sized city, they've got Washington University there, and of course that makes it horrible. And same thing in Kingston, and it's a penitentiary. So, pretty crazy version.
Well, I would say that you do have some sort of social services up in Canada, don't you? A social safety net or something? I mean, I remember things being very, very expensive in Canada. I mean, even far more than, say, New York State. So, pretty well, I didn't buy any fuel up in Canada. I didn't buy any drinks or food or anything. I just simply would stay in my truck and pretty well just, you know, make sure that I entered Canada with full fuel tanks. Usually I'd enter around, what, say, Niagara Falls and exit via Detroit, or enter via Detroit and exit via Niagara Falls or something like that. And essentially you're talking about, oh, a trip of about 300-400 miles. But essentially a truck, you know, a truck can go ahead and do something like that here. I mean, I'd get, you know, I mean, you know, you make sure that your fuel tanks are topped off before you go into Canada. You understand what I'm saying? You know, and
Right now, here for gas, regular gas is about $5 a gallon right now.
Well, it was pretty expensive. It was pretty expensive. They sold it by the liter. They sold it by the liter. And it used to be what? As I remember 30 years ago, it used to be what? $2-3 a gallon. And it was only a dollar. It was only a dollar a gallon in the United States here. You know what I mean? For diesel fuel. So essentially, as I said before, you would fill up your tanks. You'd fill up your tanks in, say, you go into Canada with pretty well full tanks here, and you'd be driving about 400 miles, and essentially that would take about, it'd take about a little bit less than 100 gallons, you know, so you end up having about, 250 gallons in all your tanks. So essentially, you know, you don't buy anything in Canada, is what I remember doing here. So, yeah, things were quite expensive in Canada, but it didn't really matter because if you don't buy anything in Canada, it's not very expensive. You understand what I'm saying? You live there, but I'm quite sure your social services take into account the extreme, you know, the expenses of Canada too, don't they?
Though I don't know how much you get on welfare or anything like that, but things are extremely expensive. That you would spend, if I had to, let's say my monthly groceries are around $300, and that's me going, on sales and trying to watch what I spend. It's very expensive. Everything is.
Yeah, I mean, I noticed that things were very expensive up there in Canada. But from my gather, see, what they have what we regard as it was far more expensive than even New York. You know, at least twice as expensive as New York. You know, I remember a jar of fruit, you know, of orange juice and candy bar cost $5. Whereas the United States, it costs what? Even in New York State, less than $2. You understand what I'm saying? So,
yeah, that's a fair bit of difference.
Hmm?
That's a fair bit of difference.
Well, this was when I was driving a truck, Baron, 20 years ago. You know what I mean? You know, up in Canada or something like that. And, it made New York State look cheap. You know what I mean? New York State is the expensive state in the United States here. It's not like driving through, say, Alabama or Mississippi or what have you. You know what I mean? Right? So, any case though, because things are so expensive, I guess they take into account that here when they're giving out a social safety net here. I don't think, essentially, when you end up having liberal wiggers run things, none of them run it very well. You know what I mean? None of them run it. Nothing's run very well. And, nothing's run very well. And, you know, where you, I mean, and increasingly in the United States, things are not run very well. But the answer is that when things get run very, very badly, they end up like in, say, Detroit or Philadelphia or Birmingham or whatever. When niggers run things, and, you know, and wiggers run things, they're not run very well at all. Things fall apart, and people just decide, you know, say, well, fuck you. I'm not going to do this. What are you going to do? And here in the United States, they have quite a few people in prison. It's the biggest, place, you know, it's the biggest, police state, you know, now than it's ever been. We, in the United States, they imprison as per capita and in terms of numbers, 4 or 5 times what is imprisoned in China or Russia or what have you. And as time goes on, it's going to create more and more civil war, and things will indeed fall apart here. I sort of wonder, you know, there's a bunch of people in Australia, there's a bunch of people in Canada, they want to move to the United States, but in many cases, it can be in many cases sort of harder to live here. You know, now if you want to live a safe life here, if you have some money, I would recommend going to a West River, South Dakota town and learning to grind grain, you know, grind wheat, and essentially just living in a cheap house and, you know, bury most of your house underground and essentially live real cheap there. You know, I tried to tell, you know, John Britton, I said, hey, when he got this settlement, I said, shoot, you could probably buy you a house for $20,000 in West River, South Dakota, and your daughters wouldn't be able to get into any trouble. There's no trouble to be found in West River, South Dakota. You understand what I'm saying? Right? But most people don't want to do that. A lot of people, I've bought a bunch of cheap property over the years, a lot of people don't want to live in a 50-year-old house here made during the time of the Depression. They don't want to live cheaply in, say, Granby, Missouri. You know what I mean? You get a lot of people, they'd rather live in Neosho or Joplin even. I mean, heck, you have people in Granby, they get some money and they immediately decide they don't want to live in Granby anymore. They want to move to Joplin or Springfield or what have you. And I don't see the sense of that. You know what I mean? I ain't too crazy about Granby, much less living in, say, Neosho or Joplin or Springfield or anything like that, much less Kansas City or St. Louis. But I guess I'm somewhat different then. What to say? You know what I mean? So, anyway, Harold Covington said is that if you don't have a trade or something like that, you can get into, say, nursing homes. I mean, I bet you have a whole bunch of old thieves here in Canada. Why, I remember while I was in Nut House, I tried to get my stepdaughter to simply, you know, essentially live across the street and have her walk down to the nursing home and work there for 6 months. And after 6 months, they would pay for her to get her first rung as a CPN, Certified Practical Nurse, which is the very lowest rung. You know what I mean? And then if she worked 2 years after they pay for her to get the lowest rung, they go ahead and pay for her to get a higher rung. And you get to where if you become a nurse here, you can make fairly good money. Some of these nurses, which have some seniority, you know, make, what, $15, $20, $30 an hour. You know what I mean? Now, the problem is that once they get a good deal of seniority or something like that, essentially the cost cutters are trying to go ahead and get them fired for whatever reason so they can go ahead and hire a whole bunch of new hires for, what, $10 or $15 an hour as opposed to $30, $40, or $50 an hour. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're hiring Nigerians, Filipinos, all sorts of garbage.
Well, they are. They are. But, you know, you go ahead and you see a bunch of, you know, up the Fulton State Nut House, they had a bunch of Sierra Leone, you know, Sierra Leone niggers. They had Kenyan niggers and Tanzanian niggers up there. And essentially a bunch of Muslim niggers out there to cause trouble. You know, you understand what I'm saying? But, any case, and generally, as far as I was concerned, anybody who brings these animals to this country needs to be deported themselves along with their niggers back to wherever the hell they brought these, you know, let these niggers come in from. You have up in Kansas, you know, the Sam Brownback. He wanted to import these Somalian lost boys here. And you have these, you know, I mean, those people who bring these niggers in, they ought to be deported. Along with the niggers, you know, you send the niggers back, but you send these wiggers who thought they could go ahead and bring them in, you send them back to Somalia. Just simply say is that you've committed treason. You like niggers so well, well, we'll ship you right back to where you come from. Okay? All right?
That's exactly my idea with that, or hang them yourself. I mean, we can't let them all go back. Got to hang something. And,
well,
and say, well, man, that's what's gonna happen.
You have all these tards here. You know what I mean? Yeah, I'm going ahead. Somebody. I don't know what the heck my problem is with TalkShoe. Anyway, Pearson, you probably know what's best for you. You seem to have a good deal of time on your hands to become an activist here. I'm not sure if that's going to do you much good here. Generally, you know, I don't much care for Paul Fromm. I despise him because he was, you know, see, what he did is he signed this New Orleans Protocol when David Duck got out of prison for being a big thief. You know what I mean? And, you know, the old resistance despises David Duke. They know that he sold names of Klansmen, sold names of it to, say, politicians and the police and the rest here, and they know that old David Duck likes screwing everything that, you know, has a pussy, and essentially there's a lot of people who just soon beat his ass as look at him, you know what I mean? And so we don't think much of Stormfront, we don't think much of, you know, I don't know if you were able to listen to me read even old Linder's, you know, little colostomy bag licking meerkat, you know, Vargina. He calls himself Varg, but I call him Vargina. Vargina was pissing him money. He was telling his boss here that here you made either this, you know, this troll or this actual porn queen, you know, interracial porn queen, a moderator of your French section. And now this critter's able to read emails. It's able to go ahead and read IP numbers. And we don't even need a French moderator. Why is Linder doing that? And essentially he said, I think I'm wasting my time here on VNNF. Well, you're running a debt. Linder is a, you know, I think Linder's a Jew. I think Linder is a Jew that was set up to, essentially do the data mining to, you know, you set up by Pierce, and, you know, Pierce was a Zogbot himself. William Pierce was a Zogbot himself. He got, what, $400,000 of order money? And essentially, he was just simply a snitch and a Zogbot who wrote some propaganda. But hey, you know, heck. You know, I mean, you know, what's the point of that here? I mean, this movement has not accomplished much of anything. So, I don't know, Pearson. I think you're sort of wasting your time. I think you're sticking your neck out unnecessarily. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, I spend as much time as I can, you know, doing what I can. But, you know, it's tough with all the bullshit in the movement.
Yeah.
I've heard from poly guys that respect it. Well, there's too much infighting. Well, yes, there is, but there's also too many problems. And yeah, there's bound to be infighting. There's bound to be issues because there just are issues. And people do need to do what Harold does and, you know, speak the truth about it, just outright.
What good does speaking the truth to Jews and police and to Uyghurs do? I mean, don't you think that most people just look outside and see what's going on in the news and figure out this country's turned to shit? What to do about it? I mean, I think that the police, you know, if you're a policeman, you're a lawyer, you're a judge, you and your family need to be put to death. I think essentially, you know, sort of like Pol Pot did. He went ahead and shot everybody who had a set of glasses because they were, quote, intellectuals. They were essentially, as he looked at it, parasites. They were wreckers. Now, of course, Pol Pot was a piece of shit himself, but, you know, the point is that I don't see any solution, and I certainly don't see any solution being led by white nationalists. If you move to the Northwest, you know, I've asked you this, how many Jews would you shoot the first day? Still there, Pearson?
Yeah.
So how many Jews would you shoot the first day once you get to the Northwest? How many Jews are you going to shoot the first day?
Well, with the laws the way they are, probably none, unless I can get away with it.
Well, the answer is, the chances are you probably wouldn't get away with it here. I mean, I have to go to Joplin or shoot me some Jews here. Now, Anglo-Mestizos, I could go ahead and shoot plenty of them. I could probably shoot plenty of them here on my front lawn here, you know, when they wander around to go to the store, but they're not the ones causing any trouble here. You know, there's no Jews in Granby, you know, that I know of for me to shoot here. I have to go to Joplin to shoot Jews here. But, you know, heck, I'm not going to go ahead and bother shooting any Jews up in Joplin. I mean, I've lived here for what? In Southwest Missouri for what? For about 48 years. And I ain't shot me a Jew yet here. How many Jews are you going to shoot, say, within a week or a month or even a year once you move to the Northwest?
I don't know. Guess we'll just have to see. First, I got to get there.
That's true. The point I'm trying to make is once you get there, you're not going to probably do much of anything different than what you're doing in, say, Toronto. So what is the point of going there? You know what I mean?
Okay.
Well, have you ever heard the phrase that the grass is always greener on the other side?
Yes, many times.
Okay. I'm just simply suggesting that, the thing to do is sort of, insofar as possible, be happy and prosperous where you're at. What I see of the world is that there's so many things that very few of us can change. Now, I probably more than anybody, I'm trying to change the world to where there's more chaos, there's more killing, there's more hatred, there's more civil war, there's more death. I mean, I am working for that here. It's just that in my time in the movement, you know, 20 years in the movement, I've not seen anything get built. I have seen things fall apart. I don't have any doubt that when things turn bad, they're going to turn very, very bad. If you are on the side, and that's why I was trying to tell Edgar Steele back in 2004, if you're on the side of chaos, You're on the side of destruction. You're on the side of civil war. You're on the side of, the great tribulation which is coming. Eventually it's going to get to you. It's going to come wherever you're at. Whereas if you're trying to build something, you'll find that, in an age of increasing chaos, of entropy, the rest, you're going to find out that essentially even if you do manage to build something, it's not going to be secure, it's not going to be safe, it's not going to be viable. Other than what you are able to defend for yourself, whatever you're able to protect for yourself. I mean, heck, I have a family which was, raised good, but hell, my own brother told me he wished the government sent me to prison for life so he could do what he wants. I have a brother who I think essentially informed on my father so that he was essentially killed before his time by Zog, and I have a brother who I think deliberately set my mother up and denied her blood pressure medication so that she died, so that he could inherit a good deal of her property, half her property, of report here. I mean, I have a brother who wishes me dead, was glad when my dad, was killed, possibly by something he did, and he was killed my mother. So, here I am with a family which was not raised that way, but I have family members which have done evil. What am I to do about that, Pearson? What can I do about that?
This is in the past. Unfortunately, you can't do anything about it.
Well,
when times occur,
I might be able to do something about it. I mean, able to go ahead and, in many cases, I believe in making an example of treasonous Whiggers. I believe in sending them screaming to hell. I'm not a forgiving man. And I believe that soon enough, that even myself will go ahead and have plenty of blood, more blood than even I can drink. But for now, Pearson, I mean, I'm talking to you, and I'm thinking that you would do better, essentially making things as best as what you can for yourself, but, and maybe doing a little bit of work. I mean, I think you're invaluable to people like Paul Fromm and a few other people, but in many cases, I think you're serving, from my gather, this Topham is not anti-Jew. I've heard that he's married to a Jewess. That's pretty well what I think, even Harold Covington was saying, or maybe that's somebody else here. In many cases, it seems like the Kanekistan movement leaders, in many cases, are just a bunch of whiners and, no more honest than David Duke or Don Black or Alex Linder. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, Topham, as far as I've heard, is married to a Jew.
Okay.
It's disturbing.
Why should it be disturbing?
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't let it, I've not let it bother me, I've not let it take me off my feed. I'm not surprised, but wouldn't you just be better? I mean, what would Arthur Topham do? Is he going to go ahead and kill all the Jews, starting with his wife? And the answer is no, he's not. I mean, the only one that I think really amounted worth a shit here was this Douglas Christie. I've already told you I don't much care for Paul Fromm and why. I mean, in many cases, I think you hitch your wagon to people who don't really matter. Who's not going to amount to much. You know what I mean? Who haven't amounted to much. Who have a history of compromise and dishonesty. And generally, I don't think you are major warlord or major leader material. I think you would do better, essentially, first working for yourself here in your own way among your friends and colleagues. You know what I mean? And not worrying about what's going on in, even in, say, Canada. The evil people who are doing this stupid crap are destroying, they're destroying their own nests. They're shitting in their own nests. You know what I mean? What does bringing a bunch of, you know, dotheads and niggers and the rest here, what does that do for their country? You know what I mean? There's plenty of them. You know, and as a place gets less and less and less white, it's going to revert back to being nigger town. I mean, the niggers, you know, I mean, if the wiggers can't provide for themselves, how are they going to provide for the niggers? I mean, in this country, we're looking at economic collapse probably within 2 years. You understand what I'm saying? Everything's turned to crap here. There's not much of anything being done at all. I mean, Obongo is just simply, you know, having his Jew boy print up money, and essentially the price of living has expanded, not only in the United States, but all across the world. And the answer is, what can you do about it? And the answer is, I don't think much of anything. I think you need to work on saving yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And, everybody should work on themselves. Hopefully can be a leader someday.
Okay. I'm saying what you think, what you ought to do is, rather than worry about being a leader, you ought to worry about your own safety, yourself first here. You know what I mean? Is your father and mother still alive?
Yeah, they're still gone.
What do they think of what you're doing?
Well, let's just say it's good that they aren't able to. They're okay with it, but I've just gone so far. They even agree, of course, but to the extent that I've, and there was a take in it, in their eyes, I'm almost an extremist.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Well, I mean, do you have brothers and sisters, or, you know, still at home or whatever? Or are you the youngest or what?
No, I wish I did. I have people I can rely on like that, but, unfortunately, I'm in a, situation where right now I am the only one I can rely on.
Okay. Well, it's good that you know that. It's good that you know that. I would, insofar as possible, try to be on good terms with your father and your mother, your brothers and your sisters. Essentially, if they sort of think you're an extremist or something like that, maybe it's best to not tell them a whole awful lot that they don't really need to know. Since they don't agree with it, why would you want to burden them, you know, and burden yourself with their disapproval? You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm saying? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sort of like Logan. I mean, I was raised in the Worldwide Church of God, and I've seen people, they come newly into church, they try to convert their daddy, their mother, their brother, their sister, their boss, their co-workers, and it don't end up well, usually. most of the time it doesn't end up at all because most of them don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? It doesn't usually end up really bad, but it almost never ends up good. And the thing to do, essentially, is let your mother and father know that, yes, you feel this particular way, but, you know, you are glad, you are glad that, you know, that they're your mother and your father. You, if they, you know, that you have to go your own way, but that you love and support them, even though they, you know, they love, although they do not support you. You understand what I'm saying? Okay?
Yeah. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Correct.
And that's probably the best thing. That's probably the best thing to do here. See, of all my two brothers and sister, I'm the most like mentally, you know, to my father. You know what I mean? And when I was growing up, it was hard to get along with my father because we were so much alike. We both had to have our own way. In many cases, I was in rebellion against my father. And, you know, as a result here, you know, I got probably a little bit closer than everybody else to my father, you know, before he died here. I mean, I went to see my father, when he was in prison, and, in many cases, he wanted me to come back, and I did so, and it didn't work out. So, I mean, I didn't really approve what my father did because he ran his mouth. He didn't need to go to prison. He could have kept his mouth shut. You know what I mean? And not called up FBI agents talking about how he's going to shoot some crooked lawyer on the South Dakota State Supreme Court bench. You know what I mean? That wasn't very smart. You know what I mean? And so he didn't need, huh?
He called the FBI on you?
Yeah, no, he didn't call the FBI on me. He called the FBI because he was all mad at, you know, my bitch grandmother killing old Martin, my grandfather, and stealing our inheritance. Oh. And, you know, whatever Jenny's dogs, as he called it, you know, was the lawyers here, end up getting on the South Dakota State Supreme Court bench. And my dad took to essentially calling this FBI, talking about how he wanted to shoot this South Dakota State Supreme Court judge here. That wasn't very smart now, was it?
No,
and so he got a trial, and he got 5 years suspended sentence. You know, he became a felon, and, you know, I mean, it wasn't like he was even going to go to jail. As long as he stayed out of South Dakota, but he couldn't do that. Now could he? So as a result, he got sent to Fort Worth for 18 months. You know what I mean? And, you know, he got a heart, had, you know, they gave him a stroke in one of these county jails in Texas. You know, and, you know, he died 20 days after he got out here. And I've always considered the Zog Babylon is killing my father. You know, and that's part of the reason why I'm somewhat the way I am today, and then all the other crap that's happened about stealing the grandkids and then trying to have me murdered in prison. Why now I want to kill pigs myself. You know what I mean? But I don't call the FBI and, you know, run my mouth. You understand what I'm saying? You know, my dad did. So, in any case, you get to where you learn, you know, you learn to avoid doing, you know, saying something stupid. Now, if Zog Babylon wants to finish you off, they will. And if Yahweh wants to allow them to do so, he will. But there's no sense in getting in trouble unnecessarily. You know, that's the point I'm trying to make. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well,
my dad, I mean, I used to ask, why are you calling this FBI agent? Tell him what you're going to do to that crooked judge on the, you know, I mean, on the, you know, even if he was just a regular judge, much less one on the, you know, Supreme Court bench. I mean, that wasn't smart. You know what I mean? You know, hell, you're better off not calling the FBI about what you want, whether you want to shoot the damn local municipal, you know, police court judge here, much less the one that's on the state Supreme Court. You know what I mean? You don't want to go ahead. I mean, old Brian Rio and Eli James and probably old Mumpsnut filled the Secret Service's head with stupid crap about what I supposedly wanted to do to old Bongo, and I told him I'm not going to shoot the stupid nigger. You know what I mean? And I'm not going to go where I could shoot the stupid nigger. I don't really have any intention. I mean, the Jews will end up shooting the stupid nigger here. And the reason I'm talking to you worthless bastards is I want you to know that this, you know, I'm not no James Earl Ray or, or Lee Harvey Oswald. You know what I mean? Not going to shoot your wonderful nigger. You know, he's not really, he's your nigger president, not my nigger president. Hell, he's not even an American nigger president. He's a Kenyan or Indonesian nigger president. And I kept on talking about nigger, you know, so-called nigger presidents here, and I chewed on their ass for about 20 minutes, and then they left here, you know what I mean? They probably wrote me down as being some sort of nut who don't get out much, you know what I mean? And I don't get out much. You understand what I'm saying? So I usually stay home here. I mean, I go ahead and write whatever I'm going to write. I do whatever I'm going to do. And I'm a fairly big man in the movement. People do listen to what I have to say. You understand what I'm saying?
Okay.
But
yeah, I understand.
I'm just simply saying is that young men like you don't need to get their names on any lists. Don't need to. You know, you have more time left in your life than I do. Of course, we don't know that. Great Tribulation is going to go ahead and curtail quite a few lives. You understand what I'm saying? But in the normal course of events, I'm 55 and you're maybe 30. Why, you're 25 or so years younger than me. Which means that you have probably, you know, 25 more years of life than what I would under normal circumstances. Now, this is not normal circumstances. I'm just simply saying is that there's no need to get yourself in trouble. Okay? Alright?
It's probably too late for that anyhow.
Well, it might be. It might be, but, you know, Pearson, I don't see a grade A activist here. I see someone who's pretty good for support. You understand what I'm saying? Pretty good in support. Anyway, let's see. Is there anything else I should ask you about?
Not sure. But I think that's pretty much Harold, where Harold's at as well. He wants Class A's first and foremost.
What he wants and what he's going to get. I've met Andy Donner. Andy's pretty sharp here, but he's not someone here who I would want to trust to shoot pigs. You know what I mean? You know, Andy is not really a combat leader. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, Andy would do what Andy had to do, but he's not someone who's comfortable. I mean, you know, to be honest with you here, if it was me, you, and Andy, and all three of us had a gun, and there was a Jew in front of us here, essentially, a sort of toss-up as to who, you know, between you and Andy, whether or not you eventually shoot the Jew. I mean, me. huh? Say again here. I mean, yeah. Huh?
Who gets dibs on shooting the Jew? You've been around longer.
Well, the thing is that the Jews need to pay. You know, I mean, essentially they're the spawn of Satan. I mean, there's no getting around that. I mean, yeah, I'll go ahead and I'll have Dembski. I mean, I like Dembski Bear because at least he's an honest kike here. But I don't know if you heard the other day. I finally got him to admit he lied to me about pretending to be Little Malachi. I knew he was lying to me. And essentially he admitted he was lying to me. You understand what I'm saying here? But, you know, Dembski is somewhat of a self-loathing Jew. He knows he's a Jew. He ain't too crazy about being a Jew. But he still does what a Jew does here. Whereas critters like Visser and Newskike, I mean, they're somewhat self-loathing Jews, but actually they're mainly Jews. They're just mainly evil kikes. You can't trust them. You know what I mean? They're out to fuck you over. And generally I'd have a lot less trouble shooting damn Jews like Newskike and Visser than I ever would, hell, there's still Jews here. I mean, sooner or later, Jew boy, your time is up. You know what I mean? Being the small Satan, you couldn't really help being what you are. But, heck, I'm even going to go ahead and put you on the Kazaristan reservation. It's time to retire you, Jew boy. Bang. But, any case here, Harold wants a bunch of alphas here, but what he ends up doing is getting a bunch of awfuls, like Axe Skanky. You know what I mean? And, I haven't really responded to Axe Skanky. I pretty well think all the Covingtonistas are deciding they're not going to dick with Axe Skanky because, hey, she's such a slut. She's just simply a Mongol skank who Covington, took pity on, and she went ahead and screwed him. You know what I mean? And I bet Covington thought that Skanky was an alpha. Well, Skanky wasn't an alpha. Skanky was an awful. You know what I mean? Right?
Unfortunately, as it turns out, Axe Sally sounded good, but was a disaster. And there's no two ways around that, or any buts about that. That's what it is. Even Andy's come out with it and said so. Unfortunately, that did not work out at all.
Well, she's just a Mongol skank here. Yeah, I've talked to a few people up around Covington. I mean, Covington, every so often, I'm on his email list, and he'll send me stuff. Occasionally, he'll ask my advice, and I'll tell him. I'll go ahead and tell him, and he can take my advice or not. You know what I mean? Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. You know what I mean? I mean, Covington usually asks me about stuff in Christian identity, and I do tell him, stay away from Visser. He's a Sephardic Melungeon. Stay away from Finkelstein. He's an Ashkenazi murderous Jew pig. Stay away from Elier. He's a Sephardic Jew. And essentially, about 2 years ago, old Matt Twat Zogbot was trying to get Covington to be on the Finkelstein show, and I advised Covington not to do so. You know what I mean? But, I don't see any alphas around Covington. You understand what I mean? I really don't. So, that's why.
Yeah.
I mean, Andy is an alpha. In some ways here. It's just that, I don't know, I don't think Andy is really, I don't think Andy is really poison mean, Andy really isn't mean, mean. You know what I mean? Me, I can be pretty mean. Andy might very well turn mean if he has to be mean here. But I just don't see... I see some good people here. I guess what Covington would call alphas here, but I don't see, ever since old Command Dork McFag was pretending to be a great Covington supporter, I mean, I don't think Covington has over, what, maybe a dozen or two alphas. You know what I mean? He don't have 50. He don't have 100. He don't have, what, 1,000. He has a bunch of people who get excited, and they think of nothing else, and then maybe if they get to the Northwest, they pretty well run off here. Sort of like this Jimmy Marr, who's now on VNNF here. He used to be one of Covington's bunch here. And he moved from Alabama to Oregon or Washington, and he was with Covington about 6 months, and then, hey, he went ahead and left. You know what I mean? And I've seen quite a bit of these critters like that. All right?
Yeah, well, Chuck said he left. But anyhow, at least he gave it a shot. If he didn't like it, he left. That's his goal. But at least he had the, he picked up and he moved. And as Harold says, a lot of people outside the United States, they get it. But, and unfortunately, people within the U.S., they won't make the move, and that sucks. If I was an American, I would make the move. And right now, unfortunately, yeah, I barred. I prefer the nigger I saw compared to the kite. The nigger actually talked hockey with me. And, fair enough, thought I was lying about being a part of, some organization. It's like, okay, fair enough. And I told them straight, like, look, they're really not, all you have to do is give them money and, part of the organization. There's not much to it. I'm way up in Kazakhstan. What do you expect of, not really, part of anything. There really is no such thing.
Well, that's true. That's what I'm sort of asking here. I mean, shoot, if you get the hell out of Toronto and any other city or town over what? Over 50,000, whatever, 60,000, something like that. I mean, here in the United States, if you get to the equivalent of the, I don't know if you have county seats or nothing like that here. I do know you have provinces. I think they call them provinces, which are equivalent to states. But do you have the equivalent of counties, which are, you'll have about maybe maybe 60, 70, 80 counties within a state. You know what I mean?
Yeah. We have regions, and we have, counties in the, counties in the country and regions in the urban areas. Let's see here, there's what, let's say Mississauga, for example.
Sure.
We've got, that's Pew. That encompasses, I believe it's Mississauga, Brampton, Caledon. Caledon's a smaller town.
Okay.
Unfortunately, Caledon's a beautiful town. I believe there's farming there, and that's going to get overrun. I mean, Brampton is called Bramaladesh. It used to be a beautiful, tells me, and of course I know this, but Brampton used to be a beautiful farming town. Mississauga,
yeah.
There's only a couple areas that are nice left. It's horrible. My comment says yesterday, okay, well, he's talking to some Indian at work, and this Indian is telling my comment that Mississauga is a brown town. Well, yes, it is too. Not fucking nearly as bad as Bramaladesh there, but yeah, it's bad.
Okay. Well, can't you move to say, this character called Jakob Israel, he lives in Winnipeg, which is in Manitoba. I mean, old Jakob sounds like he's a Minnesotan, you know what I mean? They talk with their sort of little yodel twang, sort of like a Minnesota Swede, and old Jakob was talking in a sort of yodel twang. He sounded like he was from northern Minnesota, you know what I mean? And essentially, Winnipeg looked fairly white. It looked like it was, it had trees. It had a number of things here, and it looked like sort of like a northern Springfield, Missouri. Couldn't you move to, say, a county, you know, a county seat which has a nursing home or something like that, and simply, oh, become a male nurse or something like that, wherein they will teach you how to, you know, how to go ahead and take care of stuff here. You know what I mean? Like Harold Covington was saying, is that as long as you have aging wiggers like you do in the United States, if you get into nursing, you always have a job. You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah, and he's right. Those are good jobs. But okay. Hell, you could, let's say, you work proxy. Yeah, you need an area. I mean, I know guys who are actually left for a living, and they make good money.
Okay.
And you could get, what, something like $40 a game. You may not get all the games, but, you know, there's tons of hockey in Toronto. The bad thing is you have to be in Toronto. I know guys
yeah.
who come in for games in Toronto, they come away, you know, they come from Hamilton, a lot of the guys come from up north, and, you know, they know Toronto's hell. They don't want to live anywhere near it. Unfortunately,
yeah.
it's the guys that are idiots that I talk to, and, you know, unfortunately, they were idiots. They couldn't even just talk to me about it. I was really pissed off about the whole issue, but it is what it is, and as long as the league is okay, said, look, guys, look, I know you want more commitment. You fucked up pretty bad with the guys you fired and whatnot for all your stupid reasons. But hey, if I'm just gonna ask them once I get confirmation from them on everything. Hopefully, all the places I worked before and you know my whole schedule. Once that happens, basically I'm gonna say, look, if I can only work part of the season, are you okay with that?
Okay.
And the whole
so you work with something to do with hockey then, or professional hockey or something then, huh?
Oh, yeah. I do work professional hockey too. I'm not sure if I've sent you one of the pucks in the Marlies games yet, but I'll get one to you.
Okay, I've never been able to figure out what hockey's about. You see a bunch of people skating and fighting and hitting each other, and it's something about knocking a little puck into a goal, and then there's penalties for something or another. I've never been able to figure out what hockey's about here. I think I have a fairly good interview with you, Pearson. I think I'm going to go ahead and call it quits for tonight here. And I'll go ahead and send you an email about some other stuff I'd like you to do when you get around to it, okay?
Okay, that was great. Good talking to you. Had fun.
All right. Well, I'm just going to go ahead and I'm going to go ahead and call a night here. All right, folks. I'm going to go ahead and you know, mute non-member, and then I'm going to go ahead and finish up the show. Hail Victory.
Hail Victory. Bye.
All right. Well, this was a interview with Pearson of sorts, and in case I'm not a very good interviewer. Anyway, I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. I'm going to go ahead and say Hail Victory. May Yahweh bless. Good night.